Brian, we're on slide 22, and we'll try and, as we move through the presentation, Scott will guide us through the slide numbers.
Yeah, I'll announce the slide numbers. I apologize. Okay.
Perfect.
All right. On slide 22, for those on the board and on the call who aren't familiar with them yet, I'll very briefly give a history. It was discovered. The field was discovered by the Navy in the 40s. They drilled 11 wells and did produce very high quality, high gravity oil out of the permafrost. It's very shallow reservoirs of less than 1,500 feet. It does present unique challenges for production and for drilling. So we are the appraisal programs that we're doing this past winter, next winter, will be to prove out our technology on how to develop this field. Slide 23, which is what I just said. We acquired it again in July of 2011. We've talked about reserve estimates of 155 million barrels of 2P reserves and about nearly 200 of 3P reserves. We expect peak production of 50,000 barrels a day, and we do believe that our project delineation activities do qualify for incentive credits through the recent passage of State Bill 21. And again, it's very early on the project. We're continuing to analyze the full development scheme as well as the pipeline and road that would be required to access the oil. Slide 24, it's again a very unique oil field. It's very high quality sand, very near the surface, with very light, sweet crude oil of about 37 degrees API, a lot of oil in place, and the significant part of the accumulation is in the permafrost, and it would be the first commercial permafrost production in the world. And there also are gas fields surrounding the asset. Gubik on ASRC land is a very large accumulation of gas, and we have some gas as well, we think, on our structure. Slide 25. It's a very busy slide. I won't spend a lot of time on it. It just shows where the legacy wells are as well as the wells that we'll be drilling. Specifically, we drilled well 18 this past year. We'll be drilling well 23H as well as a disposal well, DSP-01, next winter drilling program. Slide 26 speaks to stakeholder relations. We began outreach as soon as we acquired the asset. We spent a lot of time in the villages of New Ixit as well as Anaktuvuk Pass. We have made significant donations of food and other assets to the communities. We've obviously dealt with the Norfolk Borough, with all of the state and federal agencies that are involved, and all of the other key stakeholders. What we try to do is be transparent in our process. We actually have a project website, which is our portal for communication to whoever wants to log on, and it's www.linkenergyumiat.com. And what we try to do is keep an updated journal of as we go through our process, of where we're on the process, so that we can answer any questions that might come up. 26, it's just it's a very busy slide that speaks to all of the meetings we've had with the borough as well as the two villages of New Ixit and Anaktuvuk Pass. Slide 28. Well, you know, obviously what we're trying to do is create opportunities for the village inhabitants. We've got a summer program of employment at the UIC camp at Umiat. We've hired from the ASRC subsistence advisors and also from UMIAC stakeholder relations personnel. We hired this year for our winter program the Kukpik 5 drilling rig, as well as we've employed people from the villages and locals in the UIC camp in Umiat, working with us on our sea plan. We've got subsistence advisors from UMIAC, stakeholder relations personnel from UMIAC, our spill response equipment from ARO. We've working with the ASRC both on the land as well as the well test equipment. The land being the land that we have accessed with our snow road that we used for logistics to get equipment in and out of Umiak this past winter. Community outreach, we again continue to partner with local villages. We had food left over from our winter drilling program, and we donated about 2 tons of perishable food to Anaktuvik Pass this past winter, a few weeks ago. We think was much appreciated. Real quickly, the objectives of our last program were to execute a safe Arctic drilling program, build a 109-mile snow road, test our oil-based mud system, mobilize the rig on the snow road, verify or try to replicate what was early well tests that were done back in the 40s and 50s, compare vertical to horizontal completions, acquire a core, fluid samples, and look for gas, and then ultimately establish a class two disposal well. We did not achieve all those goals. What we did achieve was we were able to drill our vertical well, collect 300 feet of core, log the well. We did test for deeper gas sand in that well bore. We're unsuccessful. We found tight gas sands. We attempted to produce the well or to test the well. We ran our production casing and perforated, but were unsuccessful in getting flow. We think we've figured out why that happened, and so we're going to change the program up a bit next year. And we also stacked the rig on what's called the CB pad, which is a permanent gravel pad that's been there for 30 or 40 years, where we will drill next winter our disposal well, which would begin either in November or December of this coming year. We did stack the rig on that location of where we'll drill that well next year, so we don't have to mobilize the rig again. This is slide 32. It's just a timeline for those of you who have the slide. You can spend some time with it. I don't want to, but basically it speaks to the number of heavy loads we've moved across. We had 140 charter flights that moved 1,400 people. We've moved about 50,000 snow road miles with 15 million pounds of cargo without incident. We had used Steigers and Tuckers to both build the snow road as well as transport equipment across. Moved over 400 loads of equipment across the tundra. Roughly 15 million pounds of 7,500 tons of material and supplies over the snow road. We had, I think, 41 Herc loads of air cargo as well that landed on the strip to bring people and equipment. We built the 102-mile snow road, slide 33, from a camp that was set up just outside pump station 2 of TAPS, and we successfully built this road and used it for the winter program until the tundra was closed about 2 weeks ago. Slide 34, we're just going to go through some photographs. This is the base camp that's along the Dalton Highway where we commenced our snow road. Slide 35 is just the snow road, which looks a lot like the rest of the snow around. what we call our Steiger lifeline. It was about a 12-hour one-way trip for a Steiger or a Tucker to traverse the snow road from Camp 359 to Umiak, and it was a constant trail of Steigers and Tuckers for the extent of the program. Water sources like 7132 and 7121 are where we were able to scarify ice and snow when the elements didn't cooperate with us, when we had to move snow onto the snow road from nearby lakes. Construction of ice roads. These ice roads were necessary to move up onto the hill of our locations to drill. So we built both ice roads and ice pads for the drilling rig to sit. There's the ice pad construction, slide 39. Slide 40 is just a couple of pictures of some of the equipment that we had up there and the personnel in their cold weather gear. Slide 41 is the setting the conductor on the vertical well that we did drill. Slide 42 is a fuel delivery from Everts Air Fuel. Obviously, there were a tremendous amount of fuel that was consumed by the rig and the camps through the the progress of the process of the project. Slide 43. We move people in and out of Anchorage using these dash eights on a weekly basis. This was what we call Camp Galena. There's a permanent camp that UIC inhabits that's been there for probably 30 or 40 years. We, with the personnel that we were required to do this drilling program and the winter work that we did, we had to establish an additional camp we called Galena, and Cruise Construction supplied that camp for us. We had up to 150 people on location. This is our well pad, so it's an ice pad that was constructed for the well number 18 on slide 45. And there's the sign is just a sign that shows the location and announces the permit. This is the rig on site, slide 46. It was we probably had about 30 days of downtime due to extreme cold. The rig is forced to shut down when it gets over about 40 degrees below zero, and we had a few days of that where we weren't able to operate. This is just an aerial view on slide 47 of the rig on the pad, along with the quarters there and the ancillary equipment that's required to drill a well up on the slope. Slide 48, we had temperatures ranging from minus 64 degrees Fahrenheit to plus 12. We did have three, what we would consider, there are no minor incidents, but there were three lost time incidents. A gentleman fell off of one of the stiggers as he was getting down, and then we had a couple of minors, and we did have some near misses. There were 167 permits required to do this winter drilling program. We were inspected by the BLM, the DEC, and the Oslo Borough, and we did get high marks on all. We did have a couple of small oil leaks from pickup trucks. Those were cleaned up and mitigated. Required to do at once we figured out that there was a leak from time to time, we carried trays with us with the truck, so every time you'd stop a truck, you would literally put this tray under the oil pan in case you had a drip. Every drip on the Tundra is reportable, and so we did report every drip that did get on the Tundra, and we cleaned them up as we did it. The demobilization, pack out what you packed in, and we moved out all but the critical items. All the waste was removed from the location. The rig was, derrick was laid down for the summer. All the crew's heavy equipment was demobilized that was non-critical to remain. All the camps and vehicles, most of the vehicles left. We did keep a small camp there. The ice roads and pads obviously go away when the snow melts. And we were complete with all of the operations on Friday, May 10th, so just a few weeks ago. The rig has now been mobilized down to the CB pad, as we said, and where to sit for the remainder of the summer. This coming winter, we plan to, I'm on slide 51, to drill this disposal well that we weren't able to drill this past year that will allow us to get rid of all our cuttings and any excess waste that we might have down the hole. And we will drill and do a production test on a horizontal well on the 23H pad. Slide 52. What we're up to this summer, we're doing the spring breakup study, doing hydro analysis for river crossings, continuing wildlife studies, continuing our stakeholder relations with the villages. And the plan is to move towards commencement of our NEPA process and EIS process. We will complete core analysis and factor learnings into our drilling programs from the core that we did acquire in the winter drilling program this year. So we're very busy this summer as well. Slide 53, a summary. We're committed to developing our UCG technology. We committed to develop UMIAT, and we are beginning our in-depth analysis on developing our infrastructure to support UMIAT, which must include a road and a pipeline to UMIAT. And one thing that I'd like to mention, as you all know, the Department of Navy and the Department of Defense has left behind lots of messes to clean up from their Dew Line projects. One of the probably the the larger remediation projects is at Umiat. We believe that this road is the only way that that's going to be cleaned up. We've been meeting with the Department of the Interior and commenced discussions about working with the department as a contractor, if need be, once we build the road, to help them clean up this asset over the next 15 or 20 years. And we think that it's important to the state, it's obviously important to the villages, and it's important to the the federal government, as well as to Link, to help in this process. So with that, I'll close or open for any questions.
Great. Well, thank you, Scott. Open up for questions from the boards. Go to the phone first. Any questions from Susan or Brian or Gary?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Broussard, for that presentation. Obviously made a time, materials, and financial commitment in our state. Thank you. Early on in your comments, you just made brief mention of recent legislation that came out of the legislature this year. Could you just spend 1 minute and, as someone that's boots on the ground, tell us what that means to Link Energy?
I will. It was an extremely significant event. We're a small company, and as you can imagine, our dollars are precious to us, and where we spend them and how we spend them, all of the projects that we have compete for dollars across the globe, whether it's UCG or oil and gas. We believe that SB 21 was a big step in allowing us to have a little bit additional flexibility as to the economic success of the project. The loss carry forward credits was an important part of it. I think the flat tax was a huge part of it. The progressivity nature that existed in ACES was an impediment for us to do business here. We think that losing that progressivity and allowing us all to share when oil prices do get high. It was an extremely important passage of the bill. I won't say that we weren't going to develop, because we probably would without it, but it does make our economics better and allows for, again, a more flexible project with respect to ultimate rate of return and net present value of the project.
Well, Mr. Broussard, thank you again for your presentation and for your investment in Alaska.
Thank you very much.
Other questions from the board? On the phone, Commissioner Butcher, Commissioner Bell?
None for me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No questions for me.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And what is the status of this project internally at ADA?
Internally, right now, Chair, we are in a support role of helping Scott and Link look at what type of investments that could be we could assist with as they move forward on the road and a pipeline. And right now, Link is taking the lead on the road and pipeline EIS, NEPA, and we're providing support along with DNR, DOT, and as we move forward, we'll give the board more information. We're looking at presently a MOU, some type of memo of understanding to work with Link in moving forward, as we have done with Nova Copper on the Ambler Road.
And this particular road, would it be in similar nature to DMTS as an industrial road, limited access?
We are looking at that right now. We're looking at what type of structure that could be financed. And a limited access is one of the options that we are looking with. And as Scott has stated, they're working with the stakeholders on what would be needed to be able to use their right-of-ways, and working with DOT and DNR on those issues right now.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, what length of a road and pipeline is it approximately the same?
It's about 100 miles, right? Give or take.
10 miles either way, depending on the route. We are looking at the routes that the DOT did look at for their road. Obviously, there was a lot of work that was done by them, and we will be able to use a lot of that work from their studies. We narrowed it down to probably two or three options. We think it's looking like, just because of the sheer wetlands, or not wetlands, but floodplains of the rivers, that a path down toward Pump Station 3 may be preferred, but it's a little bit premature. So my guess is either Pump Station 2 or Pump Station 3 would be the most likely preferred route. Mm-hmm. So it's about 110 miles.
Okay. Is there anything we can help with as a board, Ted, to push this forward, or you?
I think right now, Chair, just the support of the team and actually supporting Link and DOT and DNR as they move forward. Okay. And I must say that Link has been very organized. They're moving very quickly into the NEPA and the EIS, and working with the stakeholders. It's been a pleasure to work with them so far.
Well, thank you for traveling up here and the presentation. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item C, the Interior Energy Plan update. Mr. Leonard?
Yes, Chair. Today, I'd just like to give a very quick briefing. We plan to be giving a full briefing to the board at June's meeting and presenting a feasibility analysis at the July meeting. So really quickly, last night, the governor signed SB 23 at a ceremony in Fairbanks. We had over 15 legislators there. It was there was quite a contingent of the leaders of the House and the Senate there from Anchorage, along with the Interior delegation. And I heard from the, or read in the paper today, Gene, about 250 members of the public were there. So this is a very important project to the community of Fairbanks and Interior Alaska. At the ceremony was Commissioner Bell, Commissioner Butcher, and Gary Wilkin, and they represented the board and ADA at the ceremony. Quickly, AEA has started a very strong public outreach and engagement. Again, as even Scott was saying in the Link presentation, that communication and the engagement with the public as we go through this process is very important. We have set up our communication portal or informational website. It is, I believe I sent an email to the board, but it's interiorenergyplan.com. And we will continually be updating that as we move forward with the board and analyzing the project and where we go from there. The project development team continues to work with our engineers on moving the project forward and working through the feasibility analysis. Again, we're hoping to have that to the board by July. And that is that second phase of our four-phase project development, which will lead us then into due diligence and structure. So hopefully we'll have that completed. As the project development team's working on the facility, we have AEA, Sarah and Jean, and their team are starting to work with the utilities on the distribution system, and they are also completing a demand study with Northern Economics, which is, again, part of that three-legged informational need that we need to complete the feasibility analysis to the board. So we're hoping that we will have a report in about 3 weeks, Gene, we believe. And the third leg of that track I was talking about is that we are also starting to meet with potential partners that were identified in the RIF, the request for information, on potential commercial structures. And we are hoping after July that we can go out with some type of proposal for equity partners after we meet with the board to see how we can move the project forward and what type of commercial structure that we could use on this project. And again, just very quickly, we are at the same time that we're doing the feasibility analysis, we are still looking at site locations, permitting to ensure if the board approves us going forward with the project, we're not losing any time on meeting the goal of having first gas by the fourth quarter of 2015. And again, Chair, we'll have a much more detailed briefing at the June meeting. And Gene's here, and Mark Davis, and could answer any questions the board may have currently on the project.
Thank you. Questions from the board? Mr. Wilkin? Commissioner Bell?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Wilkin?
If I might, Mr. Chair, it was a great turnout last night. I don't know if I was surprised. I was pleased by the community. It was just really a great cross-section of town. The venue couldn't have been better. The Fountainhead Auto Museum is truly a world-class, and I say that unabashedly, auto museum. And it was just a very friendly, roomy, lot of smiles, lot of just energy in the room. Particularly, I was pleased to see the representation from outside of Fairbanks. It's always a great pleasure when you see the legislature band together as they did in this project. It's very heartwarming. And I think last night they got a true appreciation, those visitors from out of town, got a true appreciation of their efforts on behalf of the people of Interior Alaska and also on the river system, and that this was one of the first steps. So that was very much a takeaway. The other takeaway I thought afterwards was, and I'll just repeat it, there are huge expectations here, and Gene knows it, and Mark knows it, Ted knows it, those people involved, Sarah, huge expectations, but I feel confident that people, those 250 left there last night, knowing that there's a good team, we hear the people, and we're moving forward as fast as we can. And there's a lot of work to do, and as I said earlier, we're beyond bumper stickers now. It's time to get to work. So Ted and Sarah and your crew, thanks for coming up and bringing along legislators, and I look forward to pressing ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further comments from the board? Questions?
Hi, Justin here.
Commissioner?
The event itself creates opportunities for editorial briefings and for broader awareness, but I also want to compliment Gene, Emily, Sarah, Mark, others for a series of meetings. I got to sit in three public briefings this last week while I was up here in Fairbanks. But I know that that's just a piece of it. There's been editorial briefings, presentations to the governor and chief of staff, presentations to the Fairbanks Chamber and others. So there's definitely, in addition to the website, a proactive effort to make sure people know what's going on with the project. And anyway, and I know we're committed to continue that.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no questions from the board, thank you, Mr. Leonard. That brings us to item D, executive session on Healy Clean Coal. Request to help guide
the chamber. Entertain a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of two confidential components. One is Golden Valley will be online and providing or discussing some proprietary confidential information, and also data from a data standpoint, some deliberative process, strategic questions dealing with the project.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there a motion to that in effect?
So moved.
Motion made.
Second.
Second by Mr. Arvin. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. We will move to the executive session phone line. Hopefully it doesn't include any guests unexpectedly. And we'll see you there in a couple minutes.